This is Shambhala Sun, editor of web publications Rod Mead Sperry, and you're listening to Shambhala Sun Audio. What would it be like to find yourself part of the teaching legacy of a Buddhist master? That's the position in which Carolyn Rose Gimian found herself when, beginning in the mid-1970s, she became an editor of the teachings of the late Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. In this Shambhala Sun Audio clip, she talks about how this happened, how it led to her work on Trungpa's seminal Shambhala, The Sacred Path of the Warrior, and more. Thank you for making some time to talk to me. Appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure.
What I'd like to start by talking about, Carolyn, is how is it that you came to be the person who is in this very special role? You were with Chogyam Trungpa when he was alive. You're still keeping the flame now. How is it that you came to be the person in that role?
Well, I met Chogyam Trungpa in the first year that he came to North America, and I was immediately very taken with him. And gradually that led into my becoming a student, practicing meditation and joining, in fact, at that point, the California community. So that was around 1970, 71. I got involved with editorial work about 5 years later.
Was that in a different capacity that you became involved in editorial work?
Well, actually what happened was that I became part of the Sangha in Berkeley, California, and I got to know Sam and Hazel Burkholz. Sam founded Shambhala Publications, and he had the idea that it might be interesting for me to try my hand at some editorial work for Shambhala Publications. So I began doing that and learned a lot about publishing and editing, and then got involved more directly with editing Chogyam Trungpa's work.
What was it about you that Sam saw in you that he thought that this would be something that you should be doing?
From an early age, I had an interest in writing, and I think that in some ways I had an interest in editing, but I didn't know that that was exactly what it was. And I'm not sure what Sam saw in me, but as soon as I was given the opportunity to do something like that, I kind of realized that this is what I was made for. You know, I'd been trying other things in life, but it came very naturally to me, and it was very compelling. And I studied how to do this. The first manuscript he gave me, I found a huge number of errors in the work that they were about to publish, because in those days they were really on running on a shoestring, and they didn't really have an in-house editor. I think that's what tweaked him to it. Then they gave me a couple of other jobs, and that led then to him offering me a more permanent position. And he wanted to move his company to Boulder, Colorado, and he was looking for people who would be willing to make the move. And I accepted the invitation. I was from Boulder originally, and that's actually where I had met Chogyam Trungpa, but I had moved away. But I knew Boulder, and I was interested in moving back.
Now, when you started working with Rinpoche, what were those early days like, figuring out a rhythm and a way of working together?
Well, before I worked with him directly, I worked with one of his earlier editors. David Rome was his personal secretary and was a highly trained person in editing and writing. And I worked with David as his assistant. And actually, I think the way in which I really got directly into working with Trungpa Rinpoche was that he was in retreat for a year, and I went out there because at the time I was married to his cook. But I went out on this trip, and David Rome said, I want you to ask him a whole bunch of questions about this text that we're working on. So I worked with Rinpoche directly, and in the process of doing that, he wrote a lot of new material for this text. And after that, he asked me to work more directly on some other projects. A couple of years later, Judy Reese, who's a very senior editor of Rinpoche's work and is still doing this work, was leaving to become the dean of Naropa Institute. And he called me, in fact, to ask me if I would take that job, which meant leaving Shambhala and going over to work directly with him. He wanted to create something that wasn't so in-house and homegrown, and I immediately jumped at the opportunity to do that work.
I would imagine. How quickly did you come to really understand how each other thought, how each other worked, and were able to create your own rules, as it were?
I would say that he knew exactly how my mind worked from probably the first time he ever talked to me, to be honest. I think for me, it was a long process of reading what he had said in the past that had been published, listening to talks that he gave, and working on things. And gradually, I think I made a lot of mistakes. I'm sure I'm still making mistakes, but I think I made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. I got some help from people along the way and from him. He was very generous. He didn't often criticize very much. He would just take a look at some of the work that I'd done, give me a few pointers, and then send me back to do more. He gave me a lot of room, and I don't know, it just gradually grew into a process where we could work together. Towards the end of his life, actually, I worked much more closely with him on a couple of books that he, in one case, dictated to me, and I would actually read stuff back to him and work on editing it and then read it back to him.
What were the particular attendant challenges working with him and trying to represent his teachings on the page? And how have these changed, if at all, now that he is no longer there?
Well, there were always publications like during his lifetime that adhered very, very closely to exactly what he had said, and they were like edited transcripts of his talks. And I got a lot of training doing that work. It wasn't always checked directly with him, but it was often checked with other editors. But I did have the opportunity, while he was still alive, to work with him on the book Shambhala, The Sacred Path of the Warrior.
Yes.
And that book, he gave me general guidelines. He gave me some idea of what material I should use as the basis for the book. And then I spent a long time working on it pretty much on my own. And then I read the entire thing to him and got feedback from him. He wanted a book that would be very accessible and open and that would be available to a large readership. So under his supervision, I made more significant editorial changes than I would ever have made in a transcript. After he died, my tendency, and I think the tendency of all of the editors who continued working, was to return to more of a almost transcript version, adhering very closely to what he said. I think there was a lot of hesitation to make significant changes. But after a number of years, somewhat at the behest, or at least the suggestion of people at Shambhala Publications, I became more willing to take the sorts of chances that I had taken when he was alive, and having to trust more, I guess, some kind of inner voice as for what was appropriate and what would be going too far. That doesn't mean that I was making up the teachings, but what it means is that I felt that I could, for example, take material from two or three different talks that were related and merge them into one version. And if in that process it was necessary to make a connection, I was willing to do that by writing a sentence or a few words. And if there were terms that weren't fully explained, I would sometimes search for the definition and insert it, or write something if it was something very common, like bodhisattva. If that needed to be explained, I would put that right into the text, whether or not he had done that.
So you would take two or three versions of a teaching or a section of a teaching, mm-hmm. and almost triangulate them to make sure that you honed in on exactly what it was Rinpoche was trying to get across?
Yeah, or sometimes he would go a certain distance in one talk and then go the rest of the distance in a second talk, and I would kind of put it together so it would read like a seamless whole. Sometimes also taking material from questions and answers and putting that into the talk where it was appropriate. And I think this book that's just coming out, Smile at Fear, is an example of that. It's probably more highly edited in that way than a lot of work I've done in the last few years.
That was Carolyn Rose Gimian talking about her role as a caretaker of the written legacy of the late Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. In a second Shambhala Sun audio installment, Carolyn will address the surprising future of new Trungpa teachings and more. You'll find that here on Shambhala Sunspace shortly. Facing Yourself, a Trungpa teaching edited by Carolyn, can be found in our November 2009 issue, and in Smile at Fear, a new book coming out this month. For more on Chogyam Trungpa, see our new issue or the special page of his teachings we've collected. You'll find a link on our current issue page. This is Rod Mead Sperry, and thanks for listening to Shambhala Sun Audio.